Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanz on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, October 2nd, 2020. Some South Sudanese economic analysts say the country should stop depending on loans.
So first priority, you need to settle your internal debt. When internal indebted, you have to settle with that money. And that is a temporary solution. And you have to now come up with a plan how you will never fall back in the same position again.
And officials in South Sudan react to UN Human Rights Report.
Yasmin Soka has once again included in her report to the Human Rights Council in Geneva the offending and unsubstantiated claim that soldiers in the conflict over resources were offered the chance to abduct and rape women.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. We first go to the United States, where the U.S. President Donald Trump has announced he and First Lady Melania Trump has tested positive for the coronavirus. The announcement came on Twitter just before 1 a.m. local time here in the United States. Some South Sudanese economic analysts say the transitional government of national unity should not rely on loans to boost the country's economy. Last week, South Sudan's cabinet endorsed a decision to borrow $63 million from the Africa Export and Import Bank. The government says the money will be used to settle outstanding debts. But a lecturer of economics at the University of Juba says the government must have a tangible reason to borrow cash. For VOA News, Viola Elias reports from Juba.
Last week, Information Minister Michael Makui told reporters following an extraordinary cabinet meeting that the Council of Ministers approved a decision to take out loans totaling $88 million to enable the government to settle all of the country's internal outstanding debts.
The African Exim Bank, as you remember, in the last meeting, we had approved a loan of $25 million. This time, the bank has been a little bit kind and they have decided to increase the amount, and they have also approved that they give us additional sum of $63 million for the same pandemic threat impact mitigation facility.
Makui says the government considered this loan as a soft loan, saying it will be paid using the country's oil. But Ahmed Morgan, an economic analyst and a senior economics lecturer at the University of Juba, says the government should have a clear purpose for borrowing tens of millions of dollars since the loan will come due for the next generation. Morgan says the government has often taken loans from various countries and institutions, but the money is later squandered or used for something other than its intended purpose. He says borrowing huge amount of money again will not solve the country's economic crisis.
Economic problems in a country can only be fixed when you actually fix the base for the production and the economy, which we don't have now in the country today. And the basis for production and good economy is first to have sustainable peace and then to have general stability in terms of security and so forth, so that you start proper production for local consumption.
Producing a surplus amount of goods for export is how you begin to stabilize the economy, says Morgan. He says the government should use the new loans to pay civil servant salaries in arrears and current salaries.
So first priority, you need to settle your internal debt. When you're internal indebted, you have to settle with that money. And that is a temporary solution. And you have to now come up with a plan how you will never fall back in the same position again. Now, I've been talking that we need to strengthen our positions of foreign exchange. We are by reducing imports of certain things. For instance, South Sudan is an oil producing country, and here we are importing final products of oil. We are importing petrol, we are importing diesel, we are importing engine oil, things that we could have done internally.
Marielle Awu, an economic professor and vice chancellor at Upper Nile University, welcomes the government decision to borrow, saying the country is nearly bankrupt.
It's a relief to the government because the government is now in a very serious situation. It's not able to pay salaries of civil service servants, is not able to operate the normal functions of the government. There is almost complete bankruptcy of the government.
But Awu also questioned that South Sudanese are consuming at the expenses of future generation. Afriexim Bank is a pan-African multilateral trade finance institution created in 1993 under the auspices of the African Development Bank. Its headquarters are located in Cairo, Egypt. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
The United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs says Sudan's economic crisis has affected the operation of aid agencies to deliver assistance to millions of people across Sudan. The spokesperson at UN OCHA in Khartoum says Sudan is facing multiple humanitarian crises, including violence, floods, COVID-19, and hunger. Sudan's inflation rate stood at 170% in August. UN says Sudan's soaring inflation rate and fuel shortages have affected humanitarian aid to millions of Sudanese. For VOA News, Nabil Biagio reports from Washington.
UN OCHA spokesperson Saviano Abreu says Sudan's dire economic situation has made it difficult to provide urgently needed assistance to millions of Sudanese.
We're talking about a very complicated economic crisis. We're talking about different climate shocks as the floods that we have now. We're talking about violence and conflict, and you're talking about a country that is already facing chronic levels of underdevelopment. So this, of course, has a direct impact on people who need humanitarian assistance and also impacts our capacity to assist them.
Abreu says Sudan also needs to carry out a countrywide mass vaccination campaign against polio for children under 5. But he says the humanitarian health sector in Sudan has only received 50% of the money they need this year. On top of that, Abreu says Sudan's soaring inflation rate has made it difficult for aid agencies to deliver supplies to the people who need it most.
We have our budgets normally in dollars, because most of international organizations, humanitarian organizations who work in the country have about the budget in dollars. With the inflation, and we have a parallel market that the numbers are increasing, that the exchange rate from dollars to Sudanese pound increases every day. But as international organizations working here, we use the official exchange rates to operate here in the country. So what happens is that we buy locally, of course, to also contribute to the economy, but to use the official exchange rate. So when the prices are increasing in a daily basis, our purchase power also is affected.
Abreu says a monthly cash transfer program that aid organization provided to help vulnerable Sudanese families is no longer enough to feed citizens. He says the Sudanese pound's depreciation against the U.S. dollar has eroded families' purchasing power and ability to provide for themselves.
We can't do it anymore. We have to increase the amount that we are disbursing monthly to the people who receive these kind of programs.
The average price of many local food items has increased by 200% compared to prices in 2019, according to the World Food Program. For example, the price of sorghum is now 240% higher than it was over a year ago and more than 680% higher than a five-year average. Abreu says UN agencies and humanitarian partners are facing challenges to procure supplies as prices increase on a weekly basis. He says contracts are being delayed as vendors change their prices before a deal is finalized.
The same budget that we had in the beginning of the year doesn't allow us to have the same kind of purchasing power or the same kind of capacity to acquire the materials, the supplies, and the services that we need to assist the population with the official exchange rates that we have now. Also, the inflation, of course, comes with highest prices of fuel, and the shortage of fuel in the country is also something that impacts us.
More than 800,000 people in all of Sudan's 18 states have been affected by floods, according to the UN. Sudan's record-high floods this year have also destroyed millions of acres of crops and impacted access to water, hygiene, and health services, which increases the risk of communicable disease. Sudan's latest food security phase classification report estimates that nearly 10 million Sudanese are severely food insecure, almost a quarter of the country's population. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
South Sudan is dismissing accusations by United Nations investigators that fighting and gang rape persist in the country. Yasmin Suka, chair of the UN Commission on Human Rights, told Human Rights Council in Geneva last week that, quote, the ongoing conflicts in places like Central Equatoria, Jonglei, Lakes, Unity, Western Bahr al-Ghazal and Warab states have seen abductions of women and girls who are either forced into marriage or become sexual slaves, end of quote. The deputy spokesperson at South Sudan's Ministry of Foreign Affairs denies the accusations and demands an apology from Suka. For VOA News, Ding Magot reports from Juba.
Yasmin Suka, chair of the UN Commission on Human Rights in South Sudan, told the Human Rights Council in Geneva last week that sexual exploitation and abuse by government officials is rife in South Sudan, and that her commission had even uncovered a sex racket involving government officials' exploitation of young girls. Referring to the alleged sex racket, she said, nothing illustrates better the total impunity that exists for sexual and gender-based crimes in South Sudan. Soka said, quote, we have been told by community activists of an increase in unwanted pregnancies arising from the rape of young women allegedly by senior government officials, end quote. Who said, quote, the ongoing conflicts in places like Central Equatoria, Jonglei, Lakes, Unity, Western Bahr al-Ghazal and Warab states have seen abductions of women and girls who are either forced into marriage or become sexual slaves, end quote. In South Sudan, she said young women are recruited to fight on the basis that they are free to kidnap women and girls in forced marriage or as sexual slaves. The South Sudan government denies Soka's accusations. In a statement to reporters in Juba on Wednesday, Edward Hakim, deputy spokesperson in South Sudan's Foreign Affairs Ministry, called the UN report provocative and a repeat of the March 2019 report.
Yasmin Suka has once again included in her report to the Human Rights Council in Geneva the offending and unsubstantiated claim that soldiers in the conflict over resources were offered the chance to abduct and rape women in lieu of salaries. The Ministry of Foreign Affairs and International Cooperation wishes to underline that there is no policy in South Sudan that encourages or condones rape.
Hakim is demanding that Soka withdraw her statement. He says South Sudan has put in place joint emergency courts, general courts martial, and a national security service tribunal and other structures to try organize forces accused of committing crimes against civilians.
All government policies and legislations, such as the Transitional Constitution 2011 as amended, Penal Code 2008, and customary laws in South Sudan are against all forms of harmful practices targeting anyone in the country, regardless of age and sex.
Hakim says reports like the recent UN report are not helpful, especially at a time when South Sudan is trying to build trust and confidence and implement the peace deal.
In this regard, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and International Cooperation demands that Yasmin Suka withdraws her statement and desist from making such arrogant, misleading, and provocative reports. This time when the UN, as one of the peace guarantors in South Sudan, is expected to play central role of promoting the peace by encouraging the parties to the agreement to continue with the implementation of the revitalized agreement.
Hakim insists there has been a significant drop in the number of sexual abuse cases and violations reported against civilians because the government has put in place structures to ensure that the perpetrators of human rights abuses are punished. For VOA News, I am Ding Magot in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, women in Sudan demand for a democratic space. Find out why after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what would you most likely to accomplish in life, and how close are you to achieving it?
My dream is to be one of the best filmmakers in Uganda and maybe in the world at large. With time and what I've done so far to achieve that, yes, I know I'm still very far, but I've written some scripts already.
To me, as a software developer, I still have a long way. But hopefully, God, I'll be able to make it.
I want to be a voice for the people who I need and help people generally wherever I find myself. And I think that studying to become a lawyer is in the right direction to achieving that.
I would like to be a very, very great musician, a composer. For now, I'm not close there, but I'm working to get to the level I can actually achieve that.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
VOA always delivers your favorite programs, news, music, entertainment, and sports shows. Starting Monday, October 5th, our flagship news show, South Sudan in Focus, will be moving to 16:30 UTC, followed by your favorite sports show, The Sunny Side of Sports, at 1700 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Sudanese women played a key role in the 2019 removal of former President Omar al-Bashir from power. As Sudan's transitional government moves towards democracy, for the first time in decades, women are playing a key role in seeking justice and equality. Naba Mujahideen reports from the Sudanese capital, Khartoum.
Sudanese women helped organize the protest that resulted in the oust of former President Omar al-Bashir in 2019, after 3 decades of iron-fisted rule. After his removal and the creation of a new transitional government, women are playing a prominent role in Sudan's politics. A woman has been appointed the Chief Justice, the first not only in Sudan but in the entire Arab world. An unprecedented 4 women were appointed to cabinet positions in the new government, including the country's first female Minister of Foreign Affairs, Asma Muhammad Abdullah. But women are still marching to amend the laws and restore the rights taken from them under the strict Islamic code enforced by Bashir's government. The Sudanese Professionals Association, or SPA, was one of the key groups behind the demonstrations that led to Bashir's ouster. Samahir al-Mubarak, who heads the SPA's Pharmacists Association, remains active in politics. Al-Mubarak says she has never felt that they have reached a level where they should stop. She says the motivation that powered people to overthrow the Bashir regime is the same motivation that is pushing people to continue to reach the revolution's goals of freedom, peace, and justice. The June 3, 2019 crackdown on pro-democracy protesters in Khartoum left more than 120 people dead, including the eldest son of Amir Qaboos. Her son's death didn't deter Qaboos from being involved in the democratic movement, and she's now the deputy chief of an organization of people who lost relatives in the uprising. Sitting beside a portrait of her late son in her house in Khartoum, Qaboos is insistent. She says what they are doing is the continuance of the martyrs' rule and their sacrifices. But they have not reached their goals yet. She says they haven't seen the freedom, peace, and justice the martyrs demanded, and they will continue until they achieve all of the revolution's goals that their children sacrificed for and to restore their rights until they see Sudan the way their children dreamt about and they all are dreaming about, she adds. Qaboos and al-Mubarak were recently awarded the 2020 Freedom House Award for their role in advancing democratic change in Sudan. The award was given under the theme, The Power of Protest. Naba Mujahideen for VOA News, Khartoum.
The global novel coronavirus pandemic has changed the world. As such, it has created a stressful environment compounded by the uncertainty on one's health, economic future, and more. VOA's David Bride spoke with Clara Nkokosyan via Skype. She is a licensed clinical psychologist and clinical associate professor in the Department of Human Behavior and Clinical Psychiatry at the Brown University Medical School in Providence, RI. He began their conversation by asking Dr. Nkokosyan what strategies can be employed to address either helplessness or hopelessness.
Hope is something that is this feeling of at some point it's going to get better. But now we're into month six, seven, depending on where you live. And maybe people don't feel that hope. They feel weary and they feel tired and they feel drained and confused and just overwhelmed, burdened. And what I encourage people to do is to consider what we're living through is one, extraordinary, and two, unprecedented. You know, different generations have had different hardships. This is a global hardship. And so understand that many of us are in survival mode and maybe haven't had experiences in our life to draw upon to get through this time. So it feels even more disorienting. And so what I find myself saying a lot is that every person has to take care of themselves. And that involves taking care of your physical health and your body. So, you know, those practical things that we need to access good coping skills. Are we getting enough sleep? Are we hydrating our bodies? Are we feeding ourselves nutritious food? Are we getting out and moving as often as possible in a safe way, you know, given our situations and where we may live? These are the important things that we can manage. We may not be able to manage other things outside of our home or in our communities, but how we take care of ourselves is so important right now. So I always say to people, you know, don't underestimate the importance of being mindful to take care of your physical health, because your physical health impacts your mental health. So the second practical thing that I find myself practicing myself and also encouraging clients is this is the time to set really good boundaries. And, you know, that is part of your emotional self-care.
It feels like there's a lot of pandemic fatigue, like people are just tired of it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, if I get it, I don't care. I can't stand it anymore. I'm going to go do what I could do this time last year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what do you recommend as far as when those feelings of I'm tired of it, I just want to get away from it, I just want to go be quote unquote normal again, kind of wash over you?
Sure, of course. So one, I would say know yourself. Know what your limits are. And the next question I would, you know, ask this person is, have you gotten enough sleep? Are you hydrated? Have you had a meal today? Are we making decisions based on reactivity or responsiveness? And often when we make decisions out of reactivity, we're not really grounded. And of course, sometimes we have to make quick decisions. But, you know, when you're willing to take a risk and kind of throw your arms up and say the heck with it, right? It's important to kind of do a little inner reflection and say, is this reactivity or responsiveness? Is this something that's really going to be beneficial to me? Because one of the greatest epidemics we have, you know, globally is loneliness. And this was before COVID. I'm very concerned about mental health and loneliness. I'm very concerned, you know, living in Rhode Island and, you know, heading into the fall and the winter months here, very concerned about seasonal affective disorder, depression, substance dependence, domestic violence. You know, things can be overwhelming. And so we have to take care of ourselves and our families. And that's the place we can start. So when you feel that fatigue, and it's important to say to yourself, what's the one thing that's possible that I can do to take care of myself that will give me sustainable impact, you know, so meaning maybe a social event outside with people you trust, would you'd reap the benefits for a week or two. Maybe a nice long hike, you'd reap the benefits. Maybe getting on a plane safely and going to see a relative that you haven't seen in, you know, 8 or 9 months. So I think that's the individual piece, is that we want to make decisions from a place of responsiveness not reactivity.
The first presidential debate between President Donald Trump and Democratic nominee Joe Biden resembled more of a shouting match than a structured exchange of ideas. Debate organizers say they are working on changes to ensure a more productive discussion for the candidates' next encounter. But analysts say the chaotic outcome of the first meeting is also a reflection of the country's deep political polarization. White House correspondent Patsy Widakwasara has the story.
Social media exploded with memes during the first presidential debate between President Donald Trump and Democratic nominee Joe Biden, with many viewers characterizing it as childish and as old men yelling at each other.
This is a left-wing radical left.
Will you shut up, man? Listen.
There were plenty of personal insults.
Yeah, there's nothing smart about you, Joe. 47 years, you've done nothing. Well,
listen, you're the worst president America has ever had. Hey, come on.
Jennifer Marcia is a professor of political communications at Texas A&M University.
The kinds of things that we saw last night in the debate are exactly the kinds of things that erode democracy, that in fact our democracy is at risk. And you can tell by the way that political leaders talk to one another.
Discussions about the pandemic, economic recovery, and racial unrest were drowned out by insults and interruptions and shocking moments such as when the president refused to denounce white supremacists.
Would you like me to condemn white supremacists and proud boys? Stand back and stand by.
Our streets!
Proud Boys, a far-right group that engages in political violence, celebrated the president's remarks and created online memes with his answer. On Wednesday, Trump said he does not know who they are.
Over 200,000 dead, 14 million jobs lost, and Donald Trump spent an entire debate blaming others.
The Biden campaign launched a post-debate digital ad blitz highlighting Trump's remarks. While the Trump campaign claimed that the moderator and the media treated Trump unfairly in the debate and that Biden is weak. Tim Murtaugh is the director of communications for the Trump re-election campaign.
Joe Biden, who was put on his heels most of the time, spent a lot of time looking around for assistance from the moderator and sort of looking around for someone to bail him out.
Initial polls show that the chaotic debate did little to sway voters.
It was very disappointing for American democracy and the country as a whole. It was embarrassing, to be honest with you.
As campaigning enters its final weeks, both campaigns are trying to find voters they can still win over in the key swing states seen as most likely to affect the results. The remaining two presidential debates and one vice presidential debate are scheduled in October. Patsy Widakwasara, VOA News.
That's all we prepared for you this Friday. We now leave you with the song Gok Marik. The song was sent to us by Paolo Mabak, a listener from Rumbek Town. We've been listening to a Dinka song from Rumbek. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask if you must leave your house. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Dwalko, oye, go marichi unarol, kachwa matengi dar kuno.
mula dong pe jabang majugla ji bana maya chanyan watyanye ne gog step burina rowawe dong pe jabang majugla ji yo bana maya chanyan.